I will call the meeting of the Legislative Electric Energy Task Force to order because somebody's got to do it. The first order of business that we have for the task force, as is defined in statute, is the election of co-chairs from the House and Senate. The co-chair of the Senate is elected by the Senate members. The co-chair of the House is elected by the House members, and I believe that the way this has been done in the past is, which I would propose, is that each body, the members of each body, withdraw for a brief caucus, and then come back and proceed with the election. So, is there any discussion to that?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Solem.
Mr. Chair, as we go off and decide on who the co-chairs shall be, I think it's important to recognize, and I haven't sat on this task force before, so I know that it has been a much looser arrangement in the past, but I think that we have a very focused work plan this year and many demands that will be placed upon us to do several studies that were initiated in the global warming bill, and also some studies that were passed individually that have been assigned to DEED and DNR, and that we will need to be, or at least it was, as Representative Hilty and I were getting together, felt that we need to have some oversight over those studies and kind of be the collection body for the disbursement of information as it goes back to the legislature. So I think it's important as you choose your co-chairs that you choose people that have familiarity with that, if that's the direction that this body decides to go.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate Senator Pretner Solon and Representative Hilty for taking the initiative to get us started quickly after the session ended and to put together some proposed work plans and to, you know, I think we have a lot of work to do as an LEETF, so I appreciate that. I have to say for the record, Senator, I've talked with Senator Kubley, and he asked me, and I know he asked the other members of the Senate at least, I don't know if he spoke with House members or not, he asked that we delay the election of the Senate co-chair until he could be here, and obviously we only have three senators here, and we don't have a number that would be a quorum on the Senate side, even though we may have a quorum as a whole body, and he had asked that he would like to run for chair and for co-chair, and he had indicated that among all the majority party members, he's the only one who's not a committee chair. And so he thought it would be a nice opportunity for him to be able to chair a committee and to have some input into discussions about energy issues, which he's been extremely interested in. And I just can mention that in 2003, when I first became the chair of the Energy Committee, I guess a precedent at that time was established that you didn't have to be the chair of the Energy Committee to chair this, and that's why Senator Metzen was elected chair at that time. So he's not here. Senator Chaudhry called me last night and said he couldn't come either, so I have both of their proxies, but I just don't know. I mean, I just wanted to raise that issue because we do have a light attendance from the Senate side.
Thank you, Mr. Pomeroy points out, Senator Anderson, that in the, and I think everyone has in their packets, a document that Mr. Fuller put together before us, it's sort of in the form of a bill, but it is not. The first part, pages 1 through 3, are just taken from statute describing the the Legislative Electric Energy Task Force. And one of the things that I think we should take note of is that beginning on line 1.19 of this document, it says, the task force shall elect co-chairs, one member of the House and one member of the Senate from among committee and subcommittee chairs named to the committee. I don't know what Senator Kubley's status is in that regard, Senator Anderson.
Well, this is interesting because he's not a member of the Energy Standing Committee, but he chairs the Energy Subcommittee of my Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Budget Committee. Now, remember, Mr. Fuller, back in 2003, when Senator Metzen was seeking to chair this task force, Mr. Fuller wrote a memo saying that you did not have to chair the Energy Committee or a subcommittee of the Energy Committee. You just had to chair some subcommittee in the Senate. And that was how Senator Metzen was able to run for chair of this task force and be elected. And so I think that interpretation has been followed in the past. So I don't really know that there's an issue there about his ability to run. I think the question is whether we want to give him the courtesy of waiting or just go ahead and elect someone today.
Well, Senator Anderson, I guess that's an issue for the Senate members present to decide.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Solon.
Mr. Chair, I think that it's incumbent upon us to have at least an acting co-chair at this time. And the reason being is that we need to have the signature of the co-chairs in order to request the assessment. And so we need to have somebody here today, or otherwise we're going to forfeit our opportunity to make any assessments for the period that ends on June 30th.
Senator Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Prettner-Solon, I appreciate that, and I would certainly support having you be the acting co-chair and moving us forward. And perhaps at a future date we could talk among the senators about whether we want to have a separate election or not. That'd be fine with me. I think that's a very fair resolution to this problem.
Well, as I said, that's that's a problem that needs to be resolved by the Senate members, which I think we can proceed to do. So let's just call a 5-minute recess.
Yes.
I think we can just step out the hall.
Who's objecting?
I'm staying away from you
guys. Mike.
Mr. Chairman, let's just sit right here. I'll nominate you. If there's a second, we'll be on.
Second. This is a rare
instance. Do you need more formality than that? Then, Mr. Chair, you really don't.
No, I don't think so.
Well, all last night. Mr. Chairman? I didn't get down here. Can we vote by acclamation, or is that the seated ballot?
We should vote.
Well, I'm just duping that.
We should, yeah. I think we need to wait till we reconvene to do that.
It was right on the black of Carl County. It was. It was right on the black. Mr. Chairman, with that, I'm going to go to the master plan.
Last night was last night.
If we flew down here last night.
For Dillon, it's Senator Beck. Yeah.
Coming down. We can see all that over to the west.
Oh, yeah.
It's like the big
building. It was heavy because it was like, what, 3-4 in the afternoon? It's like, all of a sudden.
Oh, yeah. Way
so was it severe?
From about Wilmer down,
and I'm just like,
oh, about 60, 80 miles.
Yeah. I had to make that.
So you know how
How about try?
Oh, my dad's not at the bar.
Oh, you were in Minneapolis. 3 miles of South
Carolina.
And he's made tell them about you. They pass you off to them and you come to them.
I don't know why.
Did this turn out to be not your face?
I just have like a smart site.
We didn't let
John, we have to have, we have an election.
Yeah, we're going to have a motion. Somebody nominates a
person. And then it's round robin
arms.
You have to.
That's all we have.
They drop it off in Dallas. We're trying to help them out. Yep.
A big believer in CSA.
Oh, yeah.
We belong to one for years, but I'm my own.
Call the meeting back to order. Nominations for co-chair are in order at this point. I guess we have to do one at a time. And since on the agenda we have House first, we will open for nominations for chair from the House. Representative Beard.
Mr. Chairman, I'd nominate yourself, Chairman Bill Hilty.
Thank you. Are there other nominations? Seeing none, nominations will be closed. All those in favor of the Beard motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? That election is accomplished. Thank you, members. So at this time, nominations would be open for the Senate co-chair, Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to nominate Senator Prettner-Solin as acting chair of the LEETF. And the Senate discussed this and agreed that at a future date, when we have more members here, we can have an official election to make it a permanent chair. But we certainly appreciate Senator Prettner-Solin acting as the chair until that date.
Thank you.
Are there other nominations? Other nominations? Seeing none, all those in favor of the Anderson motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. Congratulations, Senator.
Thank you.
Members, as Senator Solin pointed out earlier, we have a pretty considerable task ahead of us in this group. If you look through, yes, thank you. If you look through the document that I referred to earlier, what is included in the rest of the document are excerpts from legislation that has passed in the last session, and I think some that was earlier than that as well, that outline the responsibility that the Legislative Electric Energy Task Force has for oversight and implementation of these various studies. And that's one of the things that hopefully we can focus on today in getting started and trying to get ourselves organized to deal with these various responsibilities. Mr. Pomeroy points out that the first order of business actually that we have here is we do have in the packets a draft of the minutes from the previous Electric Energy Task Force meeting, which occurred on June 9th, 2005. The chair would move approval of those minutes. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor. Oh, Representative Beard.
Mr. Chair, I know they're just the minutes, but did we have any meetings at all in 06? I thought I remembered a couple more then. Or was this the last time we were together in official capacity?
I believe, Representative Beard, that it was. Seeing no further discussion, those in favor of the approval of the minutes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? Minutes are approved. Members, another document that you have in your packets is the work plan proposal. Which I ask you to consider. What this outlines is what I referenced in the document that actually has the excerpts from legislation. It outlines what it is that we have some obligation to pursue, and it corresponds to the section numbers in the larger document. Mm. If I could ask Mr. Fuller to just briefly discuss the rationale. I have to thank both Mr. Fuller and Mr. Eloff, as well as Mr. Pomeroy and Ms. Myers, who put a lot of effort into gleaning all of this information and putting it together for us in an intelligible fashion. And Mr. Fuller, if you could just give us a brief overview of what that process was and what we're looking at here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, as the Chair said, this BL-90 document is excerpts from laws that were passed this session or are referenced in this sort of index. It's really not a work plan proposal so much as an index and a launching pad. And the Section 1 on this BL-90 reflects the current legislative electric energy task force statute. And as you can see from this work plan proposal document, this, a lot of this language is from the original 1994 law. It imposed some obligations on the task force. Some of them have been met. Some of them have not. One is ongoing. And so the thought was the task force, if you look at page 1.2 to 1.6, you'll see there's a general charge that the task force is to study future electric energy sources and costs and to make recommendations for legislation for an environmentally and economically sustainable and advantageous electric energy supply. That would probably let the task force do anything that was commanded by recent law as well. And so in subdivision 3, that study has probably been done. The ongoing one is subdivision 4 on page 3, line 3.25, which requires the task force to make a report every 2 years on, as you can see here, overview of information gathered, analyses that have been prepared. So the question before the task force on this one is whether to keep in place that and the other language in the current law or to operate in the function where you decide as a task force at the beginning of every interim what you think is the highest priority and respond to legislative mandates during the session. So that's the issue here. I don't know if you'll be able to work your way all through that right now if it's necessary to, but and there might be a budget implication, which each one of these, as the chair said, we have a $250,000 assessing authority every fiscal year. So this year's ends on June 30th. And so as we go through these, we should make a rough guess as to whether and how much an assessment needs to carry out those duties. And with respect to this one, there is some potential for hiring consultants to do some of this work. So I would say this is a budget item and a decision item.
Thank you, Mr. Fuller. And members, I should point out that I think one of the things that we should be thinking about is just reviewing current statute as it describes the composition and mission of the task force, and be thinking about whether going forward we want to maintain that as it is or be thinking in terms of redefining some of the mission and obligations.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dolan.
Mr. Chair, I'm not aware that we received a report on January 15th of this past year from the Electric Energy Task Force, but it does seem to me that it is, it would be a very positive thing to have is ongoing reports, since there are a number of studies that are going to be conducted, that we would have that report coming to the legislature for our future use. So I would recommend maintaining that. But does it seem advisable for us to go through the whole statute to determine what parts we would keep and what parts we would not at this time?
Certainly we could We can look at that at this time. I guess what I was suggesting is more that members look at this and reflect on it, and that's something that we might want to consider at a future time. But Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I concur that really would be what I would hope would happen, if members would actually take some time and look at this. This comes out of the frustrations that we had in the mid-90s with regard to the electrical energy nuclear development and the dry cast storage problem. This was language that I had offered and was adopted back at that time. It was actually crafted by Linda Taylor, who used to be our research person in the House. And it was designed to try and get an active body of legislators to really start to look creatively as to what are the challenges facing the state of Minnesota with regard to its energy, and to keep us on the cutting edge of technology and what can be done. It's never been utilized. It's always been controversial. When you start to do something aggressive like we did underneath the former Representative Munger at the time, and I think it was forget who the senator was who was heading up, but there was always push and pull between the utilities wanting us to try and do something versus environment that wants to do something different or whatever. And what this is really trying to do is to get legislators knowledgeable enough so we can really actively participate in that overall discussion. And I'm hopeful that you take a look at this and see if maybe its day has finally come where we can become proactive on energy in the state of Minnesota and see what is in our best interest rather than seeing what we can have in the way of political fights.
Thank you, Representative Osmond. One of the things that I have discussed with a number of members at various times during the year that I would like to throw out for consideration of this body is whether we might want to change its focus a little bit, and just in terms of energy in general. As it is right now, of course, it's the Electric Energy Task Force, but I think that we recognize more and more that we have a number of energy issues that go beyond generation of electricity in this state. And I think that it would be appropriate and certainly in keeping with the original intent if we found some way to broaden the scope of the group in that way. So I would ask members to give that some thought as we go forward. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to raise one issue that's been brought to my attention, and that is some of the existing language on page 3, line 21, relating to reports that have to be done by Xcel on the nuclear plants. And I believe the PUC recently told them they need to get these reports updated. And so I think we just need to make sure that some of the I'm not quite sure which of the existing, Mr. Fuller, when you went through it, you talked about which of these things have already been accomplished. But I think under the old law, but I've been asked to raise this as something that really should continue in our oversight responsibility. So I just ask that paragraph be included in our, or at least we just state that ongoing responsibilities under the statute be included in our work plan.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to note that on line 3.26, the report and recommendations, it says the task force shall, and it is my understanding that when the legislature directs a group, whether it's an agency or us, we do not have a choice. And that's my interpretation, and I think perhaps we can't forego that interpretation of the law, and perhaps Mr. Fuller may want to look at that, or Mr. Iloff might want to look at that, but it's my understanding that an agency, neither an agency nor any other group, can ignore a piece of law.
Representative Forenstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Similarly, on the provision on page 3, lines 10 through 13, apparently we must study issues of nuclear waste transportation. That's long been an interest of mine. I know we have some provisions in the nuclear energy study coming up. I don't know if, you know, this mandate, it almost looks like, under lines 10 through 13 would be covered that way, or is that something we should also make a point of adding to the work plan?
I would hope, obviously, one of the things that we have to deal with that was part of the legislation passed this year is the nuclear energy study. I hope that we can find a way to integrate these mandates with that so that we're not doing a number of different studies with regard to the same subject. But yeah, it's certainly something that we have to deal with, and that raises a number of questions about how are we going to deal with some of these requirements and some of these studies. Obviously, a lot of what we have to deal with is very technical and demanding in nature, and I think that one of the things that we have to consider in talking about budget is whether it's feasible and desirable to hire consultants or perhaps even full-time staff to undertake some of these and coordinate them. Representative Osman?
Well, that was the point I was going to make also, Mr. Chair, that originally we knew it would be a huge task to especially monitor all these different activities that are going on and keep the coordination going on this issue regardless of who was in the majority and either House or Senate, and usually you'd be able to accomplish that when you have somebody or some entity that is permanent, and it just kind of overrides all the different bumps and hurdles that we have in our normal processes. And so there is the provision in your page 1, line 16, where we can hire staff and or contract for appropriate services. And again, it was one of the very controversial issues with not able to reach a development on that issue back, 10, 12 years ago, whatever it was. But it's, I think maybe, again, its time may have come.
We do have on the agenda a couple of reports, and I'm thinking maybe what we should do is kind of skip forward to those reports and give members an opportunity to digest some of the discussion and material that we've had, and then we can revert to a discussion of the work plan, especially of the budget. And I want to underscore about the budget that the assessment capability that the task force has, and that's described in statute, is annual, and if we want to avail ourselves of the funding that would be available to us in this fiscal year, we need to decide to do that today, and I believe the procedure then is to submit a proposal to the chair of the LCC for approval of the request, and then that would pass on to the utilities that are assessed for that purpose. So that's something we're going to have to act on today. But a couple of items that we wanted to, specifically to get to today, since major aspect of the global warming provision in the bill that passed at the end of session deals with the climate change action plan, which I believe it is both appropriate and necessary for this task force to exercise some communication and oversight with. We had asked Deputy Commissioner Garvey to come today and update us on what has transpired with the climate change working group, and I believe there's the next scheduled meeting is this Thursday, and perhaps you can give us a little insight into what to anticipate about that as well. Commissioner Garvey, are you prepared to give us a little guidance here?
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, members of the task force, my name is Edward Garvey, Deputy Commissioner to Minnesota Department of Commerce for Energy and Telecommunications. I'm honored. Let's see, I'm going to scoot over. You asked for a quick overview of the climate change planning process, and I will do that, and the most convenient way to do that is to sort of walk through using the website. But as a setup, it's worth sort of noting that this is a this plan had its genesis with the governor's announcement of the Next Generation Energy Initiative that he announced last December. That it's important that we start paying attention to the climate change issue and greenhouse gas emissions in particular. That it's a real problem, that Minnesotans contribute to that problem, but we can't solve it, nor did we cause it. But we can and should think about ways to address it, but in ways that don't adversely affect the vibrancy of our economy. And that requires a very thoughtful, analytical, and comprehensive plan. To initiate that, the governor started to look around the country to see who was developing plans like this, who was helping other states do it, and we identified the Center for Climate Strategies, who's this is their website. I'm trying to, it's frozen up. That's because the mouse is connected. This is their website. It's at www.climatestrategiesus. This is their home page. It describes other states that are that have action plans and that are in the planning process. Over here it describes, down here it describes who they are, their mission, their services. Here is a description of their process. If you want to see some recent states that have developed such plans, you can go to Arizona. And you can look on at their website. You see an executive summary in their part of their plan. Similarly, New Mexico has a similar one. If you just want to get a taste of what they've done and how they've gone about doing it, and you can sort of see all the other states that have actions ongoing. For Minnesota, This is the Minnesota website. It is the one that I think you should pay the most attention to. It focuses and describes what is ongoing. This is its webpage. It's at www.mnclimatechange.us. mnclimatechange.us. It walks through all of the activities, and I'll walk through it very quickly. But you see over here that our second meeting is this Thursday from 9 till about 3 at the Crown Plaza Hotel in downtown St. Paul. You click on that, and it sort of you'll have some of the materials for that. These will all get filled in down here. You see the meeting, the notice, and agenda. Scroll down. There'll be the introductions. There'll be reviews. There'll be a discussion of the legislation that was just passed, a discussion of the inventory and forecast, a discussion of catalogs, actions, reports of the technical work groups, and I'll sort of walk you through each of those kind of issues in the coming minutes, Mr. Chairman. The advisory group itself is a roughly about 50-plus members from across the what can only be characterized as a very wide set of stakeholders. This is that list. You see large industry, small industry, utilities, environmental representatives, religious leaders, citizens at large, scientists, local units of government, tribal leaders. The goal was to, as comprehensively as possible, but with the sensitivity of trying to make sure the group didn't get too large so that it to become unmanageable. And even at 55, it's a significant size. But you sort of see that list. And this is the group that will be meeting on Thursday. They have 6 meetings through the course of its life. First meeting was 2 months ago. The second is this Thursday. And they had their last meeting in January in preparation for the meetings, in preparation of the plan that needs to get filed with the governor and the legislature on February 1st. Underneath the advisory group are what we call technical work groups, and there are 5 technical work groups, and this is where, in many respects, most of the work is done. This is where it does get technical. There are 5 of them, 5 of those committees. I walk through each of them. They have, I'll start with the agricultural, forestry, and waste. These are the 5 committees here. The technical work groups, this is its membership for the agriculture, forestry, and waste management. We tried to keep the technical work groups to about 20, 21 individuals. A majority of them come from the advisory group, but we added a number of other additional experts and stakeholders, and you see them at the bottom. Their job, the agriculture, forestry, and waste management, as the title indicates, is to look at the issues dealing with climate change as it affects agriculture, forestry, and waste management, and the emissions that may come from that. Energy supply, we can go in detail, but let me go to energy supply. This is mostly electricity. They had their their conference call just moments ago, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Each of these technical work groups has 2 conference calls between each of the advisory group or MCAG meetings. They are conference call. This you see in here, here's the PowerPoint presentation. It's 11. It's 11 slides. You can walk through this yourself at your leisure, but it's just to give you a sense of the detail that they're going through. This is an Excel spreadsheet, because at the end of the day, this is going to be starting with you see it deals with numbers. It goes back, and I mean, you're gonna have to play with this yourself, as if you want to, in depth, because this is what they're starting to work through. Because each of these technical work groups are working through, in simultaneously, what are the numbers, who's emitting what, where, and why. At the same time, they're figuring out and thinking through a catalog of ways to address or mitigate those emissions. And it's called a catalog, and there are about 300 of those. Let me give you, see if there's an example. Here's an example for the energy supply catalog. It gives you, I need to probably put it at 50%. You're going to need to, there are about 300 of these. Each of these have a series of ideas. Some of them are good ideas. Some of them are bad ideas. Some of them are both good and bad, depending upon their implementation and their application. Some of them are really good but may not be workable. Some of them might be bad but workable, and they might be a baby step that lead to good ideas. But the idea is to get an inventory or a catalog of all the potential ideas in each of these five technical work groups that you then will merge the numbers and the data sets with the ideas. And you sort of see which ideas get the most, have the biggest impact, or both good and bad on greenhouse emissions. And then the final part of the effort is to sort of put those various actions in priority or ranking among the members. That was the energy supply one. You have the same set of issues and kind of things for all of the technical work groups. This is RCI, residential, commercial, and industrial. This is where the energy efficiency issues come into play, as well as emissions from the greenhouse gas emissions from these types of entities. Transportation, land use, similar, as it says, it deals with transportation issues as well as sort of implications from land use issues. And cross-cutting is the common denominator across the four other groups, sort of permitting, dealing with the goals issues, dealing with the implementation issues, those kinds of questions are dealing with those kinds of things. It's a Mr. Chairman, I can go much deeper on this, but I don't think that would be as fruitful as having you go to these websites and play around with these links. This website is managed, like all the other things, by the folks from the Center for Climate Strategies. They are the both the facilitators with their own consulting expertise, the state staff folks such as myself. We monitor the calls and the meetings, but we don't participate. We do try to provide limited background information on what we have been doing in Minnesota and Minnesota specifics, because at the end of the day, we want to make sure that it is Minnesota-oriented, but we do try to make sure that this is a stakeholder-driven process, that it's the experts with their numbers and the work groups and the citizen participants that are involved in this, that at the end of the day, we at the state and you at the legislature and the governor will have their input with the feedback that comes from all these things that are put together in probably in January in preparation for the February 1 deadline.
Thank you, Commissioner. I think we have some questions at this time. Representative Wagenius.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Commissioner Garvey. I can't anyway read the fine print here, sitting at this distance. Tell me about where you are obtaining the expertise for your transportation group. We've developed lots of expertise in energy in this state. Tell me about the transportation group.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, members of the task force, Representative Levine, the expertise comes really from three areas, and I am not certainly one of those areas. But they come from the Center for Climate Strategies consultants themselves. It comes from the members of the technical work group. I mean, I'm scrolling through the members of here. You have folks from the McKnight Foundation, from the Arctic Cat, from Langford Inc., which is a trucking operation, from Northwest Airlines. Mayor Callison from Minnetonka certainly has some impact on it, understanding of it. And then we brought in other folks, the auto manufacturers, auto dealers, etc. So those folks have their own expertise. And then there's the staff from the Metropolitan Council, the Minnesota Department of Transportation, and those folks have contribute to it.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. Commissioner Garvey, what I was listening for and didn't hear was the expertise in rail transportation, both from rail moving goods, rail moving people, down to the old-fashioned streetcar. And my concern is we have not developed any expertise in Minnesota. And when you listed off the names, I didn't hear any expertise in that area. So I am I'm concerned. If you could maybe tell me where we're going to get that expertise.
Commissioner Garvey.
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, members of the task force, Representative Greenius. We do have a railroad representative on the technical work group. Mark Wegner from Twin Cities Western Railroad is on it. Certainly Metropolitan Council has a significant expertise, as does MnDOT in those kind of things. The Center for Climate Strategies brings their capabilities. It's my understanding, I don't know, this is sort of playing a little bit out of my lane, but Barb Thoman from has some experience and understanding of those kind of issues. And the part of the group is sort of saying is, okay, what don't we know and where do we go get those kinds of resources? And so if the group itself finds that the expertise that they have brought to them aren't enough, they sort of say, we need more information on this, and they do the reach out to find that. I mean, so part of the struggle is to make sure you have enough people with enough expertise and thoughtfulness to say, let's look at this issue. Not every expert can be on every issue at the table, but we think that we have enough of the waterfront covered that if there are gaps, and I'm sure that there are gaps, that they start saying, here's how we fill those gaps over the course of the next 6 to 9 months in this step.
Senator Sullivan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Deputy Commissioner, first of all, could you give me the names of the other three work groups?
Yes. There's agricultural, forestry, and waste. There's energy supply. There is RCI, which is residential, commercial, and industrial. There's transportation and land use and cross-cutting issues. On the left side down here are the connections to each of the links to each of the technical work group, and it has all the background for each of those, and each of them is living so that for each conference call, which is roughly 2 weeks apart, there's additional materials that are put up that you link to. So the one on the screen is for transportation. The area that I'm linking to now, you can just sort of see the color changes. That's for the conference call from last week. This is the material for the conference call that was on May 23rd. And each time there'll be a new set, and you see you can go back and sort of see each of the living materials and how it iteratively moved forward.
And Deputy Commissioner, I'm hoping that as part of the work plan that we adopt here today would be to have some regular contact with the task force, because I think it would be very difficult for us to take a report that will come to us in February and then try to figure out how we implement it and get it moving as quickly as possible. And so it seems to me it would be advisable that we have some regular reports from the task force or from the stakeholder group. And who would we go to for those that regular contact? Would that be yourself or would that be somebody else?
Commissioner Garvey. Madam Chair, Mr. Chairman, members of the task force, Representative Madam Chair Partner Solon. My role in this, and the role of most of the state officials, is to provide technical expertise to the task force itself. There is not the Center for Climate Strategies organized itself. I would be very happy to provide updates on its progress. There are other members of the task force who you can and probably should communicate with. The website itself is the best place to keep track of it. Everything is open and transparent. All its meetings are noticed. There are opportunities, and we're trying to actually, because of the interest, we're trying to expand the capabilities to allow for more people to be able to interact with it. So I guess your specific question is who should come and make regular reports. I'd be happy to, but there are other people that you may want to look to that are from the membership and ask for their perspective. Someone from the utility industry, someone from the environmental community industry perspective, sort of large commercial, large industrial perspectives. I mean, all those people will be coming together, and you can ask any of them from the membership to come and address the committee, because each of them would have their own perspective. They're members of the agricultural community. They're farmers. I mean, it's the process and working through that's the important part that culminates into January.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Solon.
Thank you. Deputy Commissioner, I think that we're wanting to remain as involved without participating as we possibly can. And I'm not I personally have not looked at the website, so I intend to do that, and that might be very facilitative. But I'm wondering if what is occurring is like a formative evaluation, where it's a product that is being molded and formed as it moves along. Sounds to me like that there are a lot of things that are going on simultaneously, and I'm not sure how they get molded into a recommendation. And I think it would be important for us to know not only why certain ideas or, first of all, what's being addressed in the whole scheme of things, but why certain ideas are being recommended and why certain ones are being rejected. And so I think we want to know the thinking not only of what you present to us, but why some of it was left out. And you mentioned that there were some good ideas and some bad ideas. I'm not sure how we would come up with being able to have this information unless we were to have some regular reports from the group.
Commissioner Garvey?
Madam Chair, Ms. Chairman, members of the task force, unfortunately, my recommendation is you go to the website and you take the time to sit in on some of the conference calls and attend some of the meetings, or you pick one technical work group that is of special interest, be it if it's transportation or land use or energy supply, and you immerse yourself, because the conversations between the stakeholders is where a lot of those things occur, and then they sort of cascade and pyramid up upon each other, upon themselves. And so any report from any one individual would not necessarily give you the full breadth of the and flavor of the discussions and do it justice. I mean, I really do believe that, and that the best course action, which is why I'm trying to actually refer you to the website and start immersing yourself and go through that and look at this data. These folks are doing a lot of spending a lot of time and doing a lot of thinking and discussing.
I see that it's been 2 months since the last meeting. Do you anticipate future meetings will be 2 months apart, or will they be more frequent than that? And are there notices that are sent out about the meetings, or are they posted on the website?
The
Commissioner Garvey.
The schedule, let me see. Yes, the advisory, they're not posted here, but we have put together, we try to have a MCAG meeting every 2 months between now and January, with the final being in January, preparation for February 1. In between, there will be a series of the technical work group conference calls, and that will be like twice between each meeting. So they will basically be having each technical work group meeting will have, if my math is right, 10 conference calls in total. All those are posted to those kind of members, and if Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, if it's your wish, we can basically put you on the notice list and give you the information so that you're aware of when they are meeting and the conference call number. So they're done by conference call. The technical work groups are mostly done by conference call, so it's not to be inconvenient. They're about 90 minutes long.
Mr. Chair.
Senator.
Well, a couple questions. Are the conference calls open to the public, so any member of the public who wants to listen in or participate can, or at least be present and listen to the discussion?
Commissioner Garvey.
Chairman, Madam Chair, members of the task force, Senator Anderson. The answer is yes, but we have not perfected that, because of the interest, the significant interest has sort of overwhelmed our original plans. They are open to the public in the sense that what we tried to establish originally was an open conference room where all the public could join, and that hasn't worked as well as it should, and we're now in the process of basically expanding our telephone tree network to allow for public call-in. But at the same time, we need to make sure that the actual group members have the opportunity to work among themselves. And so how do you manage having an audience on a conference call at the same time having the work group members converse? And that's the technological issue that we're actually just working out. And it's not a barrier. It's just a complication that we're setting up.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner Garvey, I know in the LCCMR we've been struggling with combining legislators and non-legislative citizens together and figuring out what rules apply. And we are all covered by the open meeting laws. Are all the members of this and all your discussions and meetings covered by open meeting laws?
Mr. Garvey?
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, members of the task force, Senator Anderson, that requires sort of an illegal opinion that I'm not really sure, but there is no closed. Our issue is not that these aren't open. It's how to basically maximize the access.
Well, Mr.
And
Chair.
So we're trying to basically figure out a way for the public in a conference call setting to be able to dial in and listen to the technical work group's discussions. And handle that, because we do allow public to be there. We want to have public there, and at the end of every technical work group meeting, there is an opportunity for public input.
Senator Anderson,
I guess I would advise you to find out right away whether you're covered by open meeting laws, because if you are, you better be following them. And it sounds like if you don't know for sure. There's always the potential of violating that. So just a word of advice. And, you know, I just think it's important that members of the public who are interested have an opportunity to hear the discussions. And it sounds like you're trying to make that happen, but you just need to know what the legal requirements are. And if you are covered by the open meeting law, and I don't actually know whether, I assume that was not specified, and so I have no idea whether it would be automatic or not. But if you were, I mean, the LCCMR, for example, we had a discussion about having email conversations with each other. And it was apparent that if we did it with a more than a majority, then we'd be violating the law. And so the citizen members had a really hard time accepting that. We couldn't, you know, send broadcast an email to all the other members of the commission because that would not be public communication. And so it's just something to keep in mind. I just think it's this work and this discussion is so critical to the state, and I'm sure I hope there's a lot of public interest. So, Senator Pretner-Solon, I agree with you that I think we really need to stay on top of what they're doing. And I'm wondering, are there chairs of the task force or of the technical groups who are running them, who are non-staff? I mean, you guys at state agencies, I assume, are staffing it more and providing expertise rather than chairing the meetings. Who chairs these meetings?
Commissioner Garvey.
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, members of the task force, Senator Anderson, the chair of the meeting is actually the Center for Climate Strategies facilitator. For example, in this is the agricultural, forestry, and waste. The lead staff person is Stephen Rowe, and he basically chairs and facilitates. The state role is to provide initial input on what we were doing, but then very deep, very background. None of the technical work groups have organized themselves into a formal lead chair to them. In fact, we try not to even staff it because we view this as a Center for Climate Strategies process working with the stakeholders, and what we do is provide expert advice only when asked.
And, Senator, Mr. Chair, I'm wondering, maybe it would be helpful for us to have some reports from those Center for Climate Strategies staff people who are running these meetings and helping to organize just to get some feedback from them as well. I think that would be, I'd like to hear from them, and as well as from yourself and others as we go forward. I just have one other question, Mr. Chair, and that is in the law that we passed, we also require the state to engage in discussions with other surrounding states to talk about trying to do regional work for reducing greenhouse gas emissions. Can you give us a brief comment on how that is moving forward?
Commissioner Garvey.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, members of the task force, and Senator Anderson. I and my staff and the Pollution Control Agency staff have, Commissioner Moore, have been in sort of routine conversations with our both immediately neighboring states, but also across the nation. We've joined the Climate Registry, which is a registry that other states in the upper Midwest and across the country have joined. We have been in a week and a half ago, I was in Chicago. Mike Bull and I were in Chicago meeting with the Midwest Governors Association and representatives of governors from those states to talk about one of the topics was to talk about this issue. The regional nature of these issues, the national nature of these issues, and the international nature of these issues do require such conversations, and we're basically not leaving any rock unturned to try to maximize those discussions to see if they can bear fruit to help us address these issues.
Representative McGinnis, did you have a
question? Yes, thank you. Senator Anderson had some good advice for you in terms of open meeting law. And I would want to further pursue that by saying, even if it technically did not apply to this group, it is the Minnesota way, and it should apply to this group. So that brings up some questions of how do you implement it. I mean, Center for Climate Change may not have dealt with a state that has open meeting laws. I mean, that wouldn't surprise me. So a couple of things I'm thinking about, besides acting as if this were the case, a lot of folks are not going to know about these technical advisory groups going on, even though it's on the website, because they aren't public meetings. And one of the remedies, and it seems to me a mandatory remedy, would be to transcribe
or have a transcription. Obviously, you're going to record these things. So to have them transcribed and put on the website. So if in October somebody discovers that this is going on and they want to, a Minnesotan wants to understand what's happened beforehand and what has already been eliminated, I think that's one of the ways that Minnesotans can feel involved and not shut out. So I would hope that everything that you do is transcribed and put on the website, since you are relying so heavily on this means of communication. But I would like some response from you.
Commissioner Garvey.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, members of the task force, Representative Rodriguez, we are doing our best to maximize public involvement in this process. At the same time, we need to make sure that the advisory groups and the work groups can actually do their work. And your idea of the transcription and putting things on is one that we will try to consider.
Representative Guinness.
If you are doing your best, we want to make sure it's good enough, and it's just not the best of a lowest common denominator. And I'm trusting that's where you're going, that your best is really good enough, and it's really good enough for Minnesota, that it is, everything that is done is totally transparent. I mean, I think Senator Anderson was dead on. This is an open meeting law state. This is the biggest issue to affect Minnesota. So I think we need to just follow through the, and not just the best we can, the best that should be done.
Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, and I've got a couple questions for Deputy Commissioner Garvey, but I'm trying to get my my timeline right here on this report that's going to be issued to us. Thank you, Ed. That's going to be issued to us in February. Didn't we, in the energy bill that passed late in the session here a couple weeks ago, didn't we mandate that there would be a report that would be issued to us that we would receive by February 2008? Concerning climate change strategies?
Yes.
That's what I thought. And so what I'm trying to understand is when this commission started, Minnesota's climate change action group got busy going. Was this already in process before we passed the law, Mr. Garvey? And maybe we start with that.
Commissioner Garvey.
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, members of the task force, Representative Beard, the answer to the question is yes. The Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group was formed by the governor in the March timetable. It was part of his announcement and as part of the Next Generation Energy Initiative that he announced last December. It had its first meeting on April 20th, 2007, at the in St. Paul, and so it is underway. What the legislation did was offer some specific guidance on the types of issues and types of information it wanted back. Mm-hmm. In the plan that gets filed on February 1st. But that was always the intention of the governor's directives to put together a plan for the 08 legislative session.
Representative Beard.
Thank you. I thought you'd already, that you'd covered that. I'm just trying to connect all the dots here as I've heard a lot of information coming my way, which is part of my concern. The amount that's coming to us on a topic that's going to have pretty far-reaching ramifications in every area of the life of the people of the state, and the timeline that it's coming on. The governor started it, and how did we come to work with a group called the Center for Climate Strategies? How did that get selected to be the facilitator for this initiative?
Commissioner Garvey.
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, members of the task force, Representative Beard, Did I get this right? No, I didn't. There it is. The Center for Climate Strategies, when the governor, as part of his announcement that we should pursue policies that called for more renewables, more efficiency, and less carbon, he recognized the depth and breadth of addressing the greenhouse gas emission question. He also concluded that the only way to actually address it in a way that would be both productive but certainly not detrimental to the state of Minnesota was that we have a comprehensive look at it and we involve the stakeholders, all the stakeholders, as much as possible. To do that, he felt that we needed an experienced set of facilitators and experts that have done this kind of thing before. He inventoried those kinds of entities and identified the Center for Climate Strategies as the best that's done it in the country. And their record, as I went back to the original home slides, sort of shows their product and how they've done this in other states. He sent a letter to them, if my memory serves, in the January-February timetable, asking them to consider to come to Minnesota to do this, and they accepted. Upon the acceptance, the next was to form the advisory group itself, the 55 or 53 members that we put in place, and then they had their first meeting on April 20th.
Representative Beard.
Mr. Chair, this is helpful. Thank you to know some of the background, to know who we're dealing with and why. And part of my concern is being illustrated on the slide you have up at the moment. We are charged with several things in this task force, and of course, we take our oaths as legislators looking out for the best interests of this state. And one of them is to have a factual and unbiased discussion of what's going on as possible. It appears that there is almost what appear to be predetermined outcomes. Sometimes facilitators can help facilitate a predetermined conclusion where we're heading. I don't want this to happen here, but it appears that there's a bias in that direction for certain kind of action because I believe there are some overarching assumptions, and I'm going to let you dissuade me from this conclusion if I'm mistaken. Climate change happens, that's a given. That it's our fault and that it's necessarily always going to be catastrophic for everything on the face of the earth is something that's up for discussion, and I'm afraid that's the overarching premise that these folks could be proceeding from, that anything that's happening is evil and it's our fault and it's up to us to change it, and we can indeed change it. I think there's the discussion we need to have as this group around this table. When this report comes back, something that profound and that large that's going to happen in three meetings of an advisory group gives me pause and makes me suspicious that perhaps the facilitators are trying to facilitate a certain action plan. And I see several states that have already worked with these folks and achieved an action plan. I have a hunch when I survey the website that we'll probably come up with a common denominator here, but Deputy Commissioner Garvey, are we going to get straight stuff that we can actually work with that might be a little different than the current political wind that's blowing out there?
Commissioner Garvey, that's an easy one for you.
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, members of the task force, Representative Beard. The process that we've embarked on here, that the governor embarked on, and that the legislature added its wisdom to, is not a debate on the science. It's a debate on how to address reductions in climate and greenhouse gas emissions.
Mm-hmm.
The directive from the governor is to come up with a plan on how to do that in a thoughtful way, in a way that is not at all deleterious to Minnesota's economic vibrancy. that we must not and should not, and he will not allow us to shoot ourselves in the foot, so to speak. Having said that, we do think we ought to put together a plan on how to address our greenhouse gas reductions. At the same time, the legislature has directed that a plan be filed and how to meet certain sets of targets in the number of years over the next 50 years. That requirement is on Commissioner Wilson as my appointing authority and my boss, and we will file a plan that meets the directive that the legislature set for us. At the same time, I expect there will be plenty of discussion once that plan is filed on its efficacy. But my hope is that we will not be discussing the elements of the plan, but whether it's implementable and whether it's appropriate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to be very clear what kind of a product we're dealing with here, and I'm relieved to hear the last few comments in particular. Implementable is the word you were groping for. Whether we can actually do it without making life cold, short, and brutal, and whether we can, whether the outcomes that reducing the greenhouse gases actually will have the desired impact, or whether it's even worth in the balance of things. And I think balance is the word I'm looking for here. But this group can react to credible information, information gathered and debated with some integrity, and then we as policymakers can actually have, I'm sure it'll be a scintillating discussion, about where the trade-offs are to lower the climate overall surface temperature by whatever degree or so it's going to be versus whether or not we're worth having a comfortable life for in exchange for that. So I'm looking forward to that debate and that discussion, and I'm glad to hear that there are consequences that are being considered, and we will be weighing the consequences of the actions that are being presented to us. I just wanted us to have that discussion on the tape this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Beard. Are there further questions for Mr. Garvey? We do have an ambitious agenda, and if there are no further questions, I think we'll let you off the hook at this point, Mr. Garvey.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sundrum.
Mr. Chair and Deputy Commissioner, maybe just to follow up on Representative Byrd, and I don't need a long answer, but my recollection was that the Center for Climate Change is also going to be, or Climate Strategy rather, is also going to be working with perhaps your office on the legislative report. Is that correct, or did I misunderstand that, going back to the legislative session?
Commissioner Garvey.
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, members of the task force, Senator Sundrum, the law requires Commissioner Wilson as Commissioner of Commerce to file a plan on how to address the goals for greenhouse gas emissions by such and such a date, mm-hmm. by February 1st. That plan that Commissioner Wilson is to file is to be based on a broad-based stakeholder process facilitated by a nationally recognized independent facilitator. It's been always everyone's understanding that the link between the two is pretty strong, but the report is will be Commissioner Wilson's.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sander.
And so, Deputy Commissioner, so we have, and I'm not suggesting it's a bad idea, but we have the governor's task force here, and we have a legislative stakeholder group here, and we're going to get some reports. Is that right?
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Garvey.
Madam Chair, members of the task force, Senator Sundrum. No, there's this task force is what the legislature did was, in many respects, ratify or affirm mm-hmm. the process that the governor had put in place. Okay. There isn't an independent, this isn't an independent entity. This is an affirmation, in my opinion, of what was going on. And what the legislature did was offer guidance on what to expect back as part of the plan and what the stakeholder group should look at. And candidly, Mr. Chairman, one of the things that they're doing is actually making the turn in the data and inventory to meet what they were planning on doing when they started and the goals and targets that the legislature has established, the law establishes. And that has its own set of wrinkles, and if you talk to some of the members on the group, they're sort of having their own issues sorting those things out and figuring out. And it's a data question as much as anything else, too. So, thank you, Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair.
Seeing no further questions, Commissioner, thank you for the update. I think many members have made clear that we would like to keep in close touch, and as this goes forward, I'm sure you'll take that to heart.
We're at your service.
Thank you. Members, as I mentioned, we do have a number of things that we need yet to cover. We have another report from the Department of Employment and Economic Development. I'm wondering if hopefully that can be somewhat brief. I'm wondering if what we could do is squeeze that report in and then take a brief recess for lunch and come back and wrap up the business of the task force. We have the Seabed Advisory Task Force appointments to discuss, as well as the budget and work plan that we sort of skipped over, which I thought might be a good idea. I think the sense that we got from Commissioner Garvey about the kinds of things that we need to be paying attention to in the various matters that we have oversight for may give us some thoughts about how to proceed with the work plan and the budget considerations. So let's try to get the deed report in, and then we'll take a brief recess.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the task force. My name is Mark Loftus. I am employed at Deed as Director of Business and Community Development, so I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you. I do have a handout I'd like to distribute if the staff person could make this available to the members of the task force.
Certainly.
What we have, what you'll be receiving, is a copy of a proposal from our department to help support our intention to help attract investment to help gain economic benefit from the fact that Minnesota has a tremendous renewable energy industry already and a capacity to build that industry. So what you'll be seeing is essentially a request from us to request funds from the task force to help support our efforts to attract new manufacturing jobs to Minnesota in the renewable energy sector, particularly in the wind sector. We do have a great opportunity here, and it's already been evidenced in Minnesota by the presence. Those of you who are aware of the Suzlon Rotor Corporation, Suzlon Energy, which is already invested in Pipestone, Minnesota. In Pipestone, they are making, I think, they're at least 125-foot wind turbine blades. They're an Indian company. They have 250 people employed there in Pipestone, manufacturing jobs, very, very good jobs in that part of the state. And we have an intention to try to attract the investment of other companies. These are largely international businesses. As I said, Suzlon is Indian. There are other Indian companies and also European companies who manufacture blades, who manufacture the nacelles, the housings of all the electronics, and also the towers, which we have some industry here in Minnesota. But we have some things underway already. We have been in contact with a couple of companies. In fact, next week, a company in Ohio is coming to Minnesota for a site visit. 2 weeks ago, our commissioner and a staff person were in Ohio presenting to this company. They're looking at four cities along southern Minnesota corridor along I-90. We also have, just last Friday, just 3 days ago, German company by the name of Nordex was out in Todd County, northwest of St. Cloud, putting up their first 2.5-megawatt turbine in the United States. And we have an opportunity there to attract manufacturing with that company as they ship their towers and their blades from Germany. And we hope what we hope to do is attract the investment of companies like that. So as you see in the handout, there's a request for our staff to help support the costs of going to trade shows, produce publications, the exhibits, the selective advertising that occurs. Now, this is a very strategic, this is a targeted effort by our department to build on the opportunity of the wind industry in Minnesota. And I should also tell you that one of our staff people, a fellow by the name of Dentley Hagesog, and one of our longtime staff people at DEED, has been assigned the primary responsibility for working on this effort. He was in last week. He was in Los Angeles at the American Wind Energy Association trade show. I believe Representative Peterson, you were also there. I'm told at the event, along with Mr. Bull and some others from Minnesota. We're happy to learn that Minnesota will be hosting the 2009 American Wind Energy Association conference and trade show. So again, further opportunity there. But we need a little support for the costs of marketing Minnesota. And I should also tell you that in Senate File 563, which is the mandated strategy for developing the economic benefit from renewable energy, we'll be working on that. And I think August 1st is the first deadline of a preliminary strategy. We'll be working with Department of Commerce and Agriculture to present that to you, and I think to this task force, Mr. Chairman, and also to the relevant committees in each body as well. So we have a request for $100,000 to support these costs, and we'll use it. We would use it very well to help to attract more investment. So those are my quick comments, Mr. Chairman. I'll be happy to take any questions.
Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, maybe for Mr. Fuller, we've got a $200,000 or $250,000 per year we can levy for this place, to operate this committee. What does it take just to run this committee just when we show up and have meetings and so on? I guess where I'm going with this is, do we have $100,000 out of that assessment that we can do this, and can we do that by statute?
The question of what we can do with the funds, I think, is very interesting. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mr. Fuller, did you have any observations, or Mr. Eloff?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, we have a $15,000 balance, so we have $250,000 this fiscal year. That would be $265,000. If we used our assessment for next year, that would be, $515,000. So we'd have $515,000 within the next 13 months as to the amount. Their next question is it an appropriate one? I think it's in the range of it. You have to look at the language carefully. The task of the task force is to help develop a sustainable energy economy, electric energy economy. It certainly, arguably, contributes to that. So there'd be two levels of analysis. First, to see if whether it's permitted, which I think I haven't analyzed yet, and then to see where it falls in the priority of our other expenditures. So the assessment authority is, I think it says it's for the operations of the task force. And so that would be the question. Would funding, and obviously we can contract with third parties, and so we fund other people's behavior. Is it funding a state agency's behavior something this task force wants to do? I think that would be what it would come down to.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Loftus, as you know, there was a bill that went through the process that set up this task for DEED to do. Mm-hmm. That was Senator Dahl's bill. I don't know who carried it in the House, but it's a little surprising. I'm not opposed to what you're suggesting here. It just seems a little surprising and unusual that the department had nothing to say during the legislative session about the need for funding to do this. And and is now coming forward with this request. And I honestly think that this is something, I mean, I think many of us were surprised, and, you know, I hate to have you be sort of the brunt of this frustration, but, you know, I think this is something Deed should have been doing for many years, and I'm not sure why it's not something that's a high priority within your existing budget and existing departments to be out trying to recruit manufacturing and jobs businesses that relate to renewable energy development. I mean, something that the state legislature has been talking about for years. So why now?
Still Loftus.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, two answers. One in respect to specifically on the wind energy area. For us, this is an evolving area to try to understand what opportunities are out there, and who are the companies, what kind of investments are they making, and understanding the industry. It's coming onto us quickly, but it's not been a year or two in the making where we've been thinking about how we can attract the Nordexes and the Vestas and the other companies. So I can't say that anything other than that we're working it out as we go along to try to learn more. And the thought about the marketing area, we did have a request in the legislature this year for $200,000 for marketing Minnesota in the governor's budget that was not funded this session. So we recognize the need to market Minnesota, and we go out and do it as well as we can, scraping funds together with our own resources and partners. But there just hasn't been a lot of money in the past to do this, and we do the best we can.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Senator Anderson,
I guess I'd like to know specifically if you ever commented on the bill that was proposed to have you do this work on. I mean, I assume this is kind of in reaction to Senator Dahl's bill and the mandate that we've now passed that affects the department. And let me just say by editorially that, you know, I was in Germany last December studying renewable energy industries there, and happened to be at the ministry, one of the state ministries on the environment, when they had a whole day's worth of presentations from the state of Pennsylvania. They had a whole seminar there. And so, and as we all know, you know, Pennsylvania got the Gamesa company contract, and they've got hundreds of jobs that we didn't get here in Minnesota because they were able to get that company to locate there and build their manufacturing plant there. And I know it takes money, and it takes not just money, but it takes a commitment at the highest levels to try to make this a priority of our economic development efforts. And so I'm just surprised we didn't hear, I don't believe we heard from the agency during our discussion of these issues and perhaps the marketing request that you had was in a separate committee and didn't really relate to the energy issues. So where were you guys during that discussion?
Mr. Loftus?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, I would say we were probably absent. We should have been there.
Senator Sutherland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Loftus, I have similar questions about this, and I would like to see a large, better breakdown of how many trade shows you intend to attend and how much it costs for the exhibits in a trade show, how many, what those estimates are. I sit on a number of boards. I think this is a large request for targeting wind energy when I would assume you would be doing some of this with the other marketing you would be doing for the state also. But I've seen budgets like this for all the marketing that some agencies do.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Partner Solon, I can supply a more detailed budget of what this would take to roll up the detail to get to these numbers, but I can tell you that to go to a trade show, you know, a 10 by 10, 10 by 12 space at a trade show with the cost of attending it and buying electricity and renting a wastebasket, I mean, it gets down to that level of detail. It's probably about a $10,000 cost to have that kind of space at a trade show, along with staff being there and renting the space, depending on how they charge you for admission to the events and so on. We are involved in at least three or four other trade shows annually to two real estate conventions in particular, or two real estate groups that are not specific to wind energy but are to all of manufacturing. We do those, two of those every year, and then we pick and choose other manufacturing sectors that seem appropriate. But it isn't hard to get the $25,000 for trade show costs, as having worked on trying to raise money for those things. So, but we'll be happy to supply more detail about this, Mr. Chairman and Senator Brettner-Sol.
Thank you. We would appreciate that.
Mr. and Madam Chair, my name is members of the task force. My name is Brian McDaniel, and I also work for the Department of Employment and Economic Development. I wanted to speak just very briefly to Senator Anderson's point about the about Senator Dahl's bill. Commissioner McElroy has had numerous conversations with other members of the administration as far as how to best go forward with the strategy portion of the Senator Dahl bill. And to that point, we indicated kind of collectively that we could do the strategy part without any further need of funds. Mr. Bull from the Department of Commerce, I believe, did speak on behalf of the administration to that point. As far as the marketing aspect of it, that is what we're coming forward today, seeking additional funds. The strategy part, we are committed to do without additional funds. I just wanted to clarify that if I could. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius?
Thank you. It's a strategy issue that I'm more interested in right now. What you have asked us to do is just fund something that is fairly diffuse, and I don't know what the outcomes will be of this money. And when we, at least in the committees I work on, we look at what will the outcomes be, what is your targeted outcome here. So as you are saying, advertise in a trade journal or exhibit, what is the outcome that Minnesotans are going to get for this dollar if we were to do it? It does seem so unusual to have a request for an appropriation from a task force rather than the legislature. I still haven't gotten over that lump, but if I were to get over that lump, then the next thing would be, what are the outcomes that we're going to get from the money?
Still left us.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, economic development marketing outcomes are sometimes an elusive thing to talk about. Those of us, my peers across the country that do marketing and economic development, point to things like number of leads generated, number of real solid leads that we can identify that we can work on. Those, you know, we are very careful not to say we'll project X number of jobs or X number of dollars of investment. That's a hard thing to commit to. That's the ultimate goal, but I would say that one of our primary outcomes should be to generate prospects that conceivably can represent the leads that we have or the opportunities that we're looking for. The two that I mentioned already, the Nordex company, I think that's a very good lead, the German company. And the company from Ohio that's visiting here next week, again, another real opportunity. In that case, probably 400 jobs that they're looking at. But that's the best I can give you, Representative Wagenius, about the outcomes we're hoping for, investment that didn't occur before. And that's kind of the mission of all of us, to try to figure out what investment will occur from what expenditures, what outcomes. Would $100,000 that yielded one company that employed 400 people in rural community, would that be a good investment? And that's the question that we all have to weigh.
Further questions? Representative Beard.
Just a comment, Mr. Chair, from someone I used to attend trade shows for my business. It was one of those things that if you didn't do it, you noticed it in your business. But when you went to a trade show, sometimes it was kind of hard to quantify just what you actually gained. But until you didn't go the next year, then you knew what it was that you were missing on. And I think I personally have no quibble at all. In fact, I can see the wisdom in the four activities that DEED is looking to do here, specifically related to this niche industry. This is kind of money they have to spend if they're going to keep this industry in front of the larger industry, just to make them aware of Minnesota and the things we have to offer. This, to me, is a no-brainer. My question is, where does the $100,000 come from? Can we actually take it from LEEFT, or do we have to put it in an agency bill next year and actually authorize them to spend it and appropriate the money? That's really the question I have here. I commend the department for actually quantifying how they're going to make the approaches to the industry at large and put a Minnesota face in a place that maybe hasn't seen a Minnesota face in this industry for a while. So this is necessary stuff, folks. It's good stuff. I guess the question that I really have is, can we do it from this account, or do we need to do it from somewhere else?
Well, I think that is the question, Representative Beard, and one we'll have to wrestle with.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for your time.
Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Loftus?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Members, it's 12:25. Do you want to try to... I think that clock is fast, maybe. My watch is slow. In any case, do you want to try to wade through the rest of the agenda, or would you prefer to take a break?
Mr. Chair, my vote would be to keep going if you think we can finish in, 45 minutes. But it depends on what's your estimated time for how much more work we have to do.
Well, I think my inclination at this point would be to just keep going also. I don't think we're going to take much more than that 45 minutes to conclude. If we want to revert on the agenda back to the question of the work plan and the budget, I think one thing that has become clear is that there is a lot to do, but all of these questions are very complex. We need to be thinking about what kind of information we require, what kind of oversight we wish to exercise regarding these various mandates, and certainly we need to deal with the question of the budget, as has been mentioned. If we are going to initiate an assessment in this fiscal year, that's something we need to act on today, and I think that from my perspective, it's relatively clear that whatever decision we might make about the deed proposal, there's going to be a lot of demands on this task force for staff, for consultancy, for information, and it would certainly be my recommendation that we make a request for the maximum assessment authority that we can exercise. Since I brought that up at this point, do we have any discussion about the budgetary issues? Representative Beard.
Mr. Chair, just a comment, just so we're clear about where the money comes from. I believe, if I recall this from previous years on this committee, the appropriation actually comes from a utility that owns a nuclear power plant, if I'm not mistaken. Or does it come from the entire industry across the state?
Mr. Eloff or Mr. Fuller?
I'm looking at the document that Mr. Fuller prepared on page 4 at the top, starting on line 7. Um, talking to the department shall apportion those costs, the costs assessed, among all energy utilities in proportion to their respective gross operating revenues from the sale of gas or electric service within the state during the last calendar year. So it's a broad array of utilities, both electric and gas.
Thank you for clarifying that. All the citizens in the state get to pitch in for this, and gas and electric.
You think that would pretty much cover everyone, except for the guys that sleep under the bridge.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Stoll.
Yeah, just looking at the work plan proposal that our staff pulled together for us, based on the bills that we passed and the mandates that were made on the Electric Energy Task Force, there are a number of studies that need to be done. And if you look at your work plan proposal here, a number of studies that need to be done. And I think that we need to define how those studies will be done, whether we need to hire additional staff or consultants to manage that, or whether those could be taken on through our current staff, although I think some of it can be. Perhaps number two could be something that we could do in-house. But I suspect that a lot of this is going to require, first of all, the seabed advisory task force requires appointing a task force. Mm-hmm. And we have looked at that and already made some inquiries about who would be appropriate to sit on that task force and what the makeup of that task force should be. But the other studies, the nuclear energy study, I don't think that's something that we can manage ourselves. I think that we would need to put out an RFP and ask people to respond to that. So I think at this time it would be appropriate for us also, I agree with you, to assess the full amount, especially if we're going to take into consideration the request by deed for marketing funds too. I think we are going to need the full amount at this time. Okay, Mr. Chair, I would move that we assess the full. Mr. Chair, I would move that the co-chairs request that the LCC approve a budget of $250,000 to for the year, fiscal year 2007, to be assessed against the utilities.
That motion is in order. Is there any discussion? All those in favor of the Solon motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed?
No.
Motion is adopted. I believe what we need to do to proceed with that is write a letter signed by both of us to the chair of the LCC, which we will do as soon as possible. I think what we should do at this point is skip a couple of items in the proposal and go to the seabed advisory task force question. We did ask staff to put together a list of recommendations based on a sort of open an open invitation to concerned parties to participate. We had a number of responses. And tried to narrow the list somewhat based on those responses and an attempt to be as comprehensive as we could be. I did mention this earlier, but members, I would call your attention to the language that is in the document that Mr. Fuller had prepared. If I can find it. Beginning on page 6 and line 6.19. What this language specifies is that the Legislative Electric Energy Task Force shall oversee and appoint an advisory task force on community-based energy development. I think Mr. Pomeroy has distributed a list of proposed nominees for the task force that, as I said, we put together as much as possible in an open process in which people were invited to submit theirs or names of others. And if everyone has a document in front of them, I think it would be appropriate to discuss this at this point.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Stengel.
Mr. Chair, may I ask, I had a particular member of my, lives in my district, owns a fair number of windmills that was formerly on the, or at least was on, or perhaps still is until we make it a change on the seabed task force. Do you know if existing members were asked at all about interest in continuing?
Well, there's, I don't think, Senator, that there is an existing seabed task force. There was a stakeholder group that came together to work on that portion of the bill.
That may be it, Mr. Chair.
Perhaps we should ask Mr. Pomeroy, who was instrumental in the process, to describe the process.
Sure. Mr. Chair and members, the process I use, that working group all got an email from myself a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, asking folks who are interested to be on that, or in many cases, you'll see more of the technical folks from the various utilities versus the lobbyists who were involved in that initial working group. So most of those utilities submitted, you know, names to myself, and then I think most folks who asked to be on that are included on this list. We narrowed it a little bit, as Representative Filthy said, just in for the purpose of making it as workable as possible while trying to make sure that all the various interests would be represented and that when this group reports back, there wouldn't be folks remaining out there saying, you know, hey, we weren't part of this group, so we don't support whatever recommendations they have. So whether this is fully inclusive or not, I think, is up for the members here to decide.
Senator Stoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the areas where there is a noticeable sparsity of members is in the landowners themselves. And we felt that that might be an area where we would want to add people, since seabed really is related to landowners, and we would like to see either more landowners or advocates for the landowners, representatives of the landowners participating in the seabed task force.
We do need to initiate this process, and I would like to point out that the statutory language is somewhat silent on the question of how this group would organize itself, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing. But one thing that is, I think, clear is that it certainly would be possible for the participation of others who are not officially members of the group in the same way that we have observed with any number of stakeholder groups or working groups. What I would propose is, if there's no objection or no immediate additions to the list that we have proposed, is that we formally adopt that, so that we can get this group functioning as soon as possible. And I would also ask the permission of the task force to allow the co-chairs to appoint additional members as might be proposed at a later time. I think some people felt that they were not aware of this in order to in time to meet a deadline. And also, we're not entirely sure that everyone that has been nominated on this list is willing to serve. So we might have to make some replacements or substitutions. Representative Beard.
A couple of practical matters, Mr. Chairman. Who's going to chair or head the task force, or how is that going to be determined? And secondly, will there be per diem or expenses accruing to these folks for coming here to attend, and the process of their meetings? Conference calls or a location here?
Well, as we see in the statutory language, none of that is spelled out. And I, since what is spelled out is that this task force shall oversee that advisory task force, I guess it's up to us to determine that. Senator Solon.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, we've done a search of the United States to see if there's any similar type of process, and Minnesota seems to be the leader in the limited amount of structure we have to CBET at this time. So we really are forging new territory. At the same time, I'm sure that there are some experts out there that are more informed about wind energy and transmission and how to site things and ownership and things like that than we are. And it would be my recommendation that this would be one area where we would put out an RFP to hire somebody. Because of all the stakeholder groups we held on energy policy this year, this was the one that seems to have the most splinter groups, and it was harder to pull together. And so I would think that it would be helpful for us to hire somebody with some expertise to come in and facilitate this group and to give us some direction. I also would recommend that we pay expenses of the task force members, not necessarily per diems, but travel expenses, things like that.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to recommend what Senator Pretner Solon has recommended to this advisory task force for CBED, specifically mentioning the splintering and the this, and all these people know each other. And what I think we're really coming down to is the financing and the definition. A lot of the other stuff is industry standard already. It's the financing and the definition and the local percentages. That's, I think, where the most tension is. So hopefully we will follow Senator Pretner Solon's recommendation.
Mr. Chair,
Senator
someone
Anderson.
Asked me before the meeting, Ms. Bjorklund, she said, I think that's who you're referencing, perhaps that said she really wanted a representative on this, and so I don't know if we want to contemplate adding anybody or just, as you said, just keep that option open. I mean, I don't know how to deal with that at this point.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, I did have a conversation with Ms. Bjorklund also. I asked her to give us some more information about how the group she represents differs from non-seabed landowners or seabed landowners and mm-hmm. why there should be a separate designation. So if you would permit, I think Representative Hilty and I might look at that and see if there really is a need for additional person to be on the committee.
Fine.
And also, I, again, would advocate for more landowners themselves on the committee.
Representative Beard, did you have a comment?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sandra.
Mr. Chair, and this is for anybody that was involved in this. Is there an appropriate role at all for local government to be represented on this? And I think particularly from standpoint of this issue, maybe county government. And again, I don't know the answer. I just kind of asked the question. Planning and zoning issues and so on.
I think that's a very good question. I don't know. Did we have any interest expressed, Mr. Pomeroy?
Representative Hilty, there, I guess, wasn't any interest expressed, but given who was on that email distribution list put together by Commissioner Bull, I don't know if they'd know that this is happening.
Well, Chair, I would just leave that open for the co-chairs to consider if they think it's appropriate.
I think that's a very good point. Perhaps what we should do is extend an invitation to, like, the Association of Minnesota Counties and to perhaps the League of Minnesota Cities and other municipal organizations, just to make sure they are aware of this and extend that opportunity. So I think you're right. There certainly are issues that they ought to be concerned with here.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Anderson.
I don't have any objection to that at all. I just want to point out that the law does not cover that. So we just need to be a little bit careful to make sure we're following the law. But I think it's fine to invite them to participate, perhaps in a slightly informal manner or something. We'll leave that up to you to figure out.
Yeah. Good point. Senator Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, there is, though, language in our seabed legislation that we passed this year that allows counties to site small projects. So they certainly would be appropriate to be on the task force. And let me say, I just took a trip down to Missouri driving, and I drove through Iowa. If you want to see an impressive sight on 35 as you're going south, it's all those windmills as you go through Iowa. And if we're in competition, we better get going. I counted over 131 of them in one sight as we were driving by it.
Further discussion to the seabed question?
Okay. Mr. Chair, I then would move that we adopt the recommendation for the advisory task force on seabed, that we put out an RFP for a facilitator, and that we leave open the possibility of including other members on the task force.
Discussion to the motion. Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? Motion is adopted. Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I just want to bring up something that I'd like to pass out, if I could do that right now. I don't know if members saw last week, there was a press release about the energy transition roadmap that was just released by the Powering the Plains group. And I just have a brief, I don't have a copy of the press release because it kind of came out funny on the internet, but on email, but It's just a short summary, and this is something we might want to think about bringing in front of the LAETF for a presentation. This is a group that was made up of utilities, environmentalists, regulators, bipartisan group of legislators, and agricultural leaders from around the Upper Midwest and Manitoba. I've served on this for several years as one of the legislative representatives, and they were requested by the International Legislators Forum, which is a bipartisan coalition of legislative leaders from Manitoba, Minnesota, North Dakota, and South Dakota. They were requested to put together a 50-year energy transition roadmap. And this past week, that roadmap was released. And there's a much more extensive roadmap you can look at. It's all available on the web that basically runs four different scenarios for how you can get from here to 2055 and meet our carbon reduction goals, which are, I think it's a roughly 80% reduction, just yeah. as we passed in our legislation this year. And they run scenarios based on four different scenarios. One is business as usual, one is a high energy efficiency model, one is a high renewables model, and one is a high coal with carbon capture and storage model. And there's certainly, you know, these are not set in stone. They're just informational to give you some ideas of how you can get to that reduction with different strategies. And certainly you could pick and choose among a lot of them to get to a plan on a state-by-state level. But it's really valuable information, and a lot of very good work has gone into this. And so I would recommend members to take a look at this on the website and read the report and the roadmap, and that perhaps it's something that the LAETF might want to look at in the future if we have time with all the work we have to do.
Thank you, Senator Anderson. I did visit the website. I believe that the report runs to well over 100 pages altogether. Right, it's obvious that a lot of effort went into that, and there's a lot of good information. I would recommend it as well.
And, Mr. Chair, I think it's written in a very accessible kind of layperson's terminology. It's not highly technical, so I think it's really easy for all of us to absorb. It is long.
Senator Solon.
Mr. Chair, going back to the seabed advisory group, I'm wondering if it wouldn't be appropriate to assign in that RFP the property agreement study, the lease agreement question that was raised in the study that we agreed to do. It is related to seabed, and I'm wondering if that also could be a component of that RFP, if they could be done at the same time by the same task force. And if nobody has any objection, I'd make an amendment. I would move that be added to that RFP.
So what would the motion be then, Senator?
Mr. Chair, that included in the RFP and regarding the seabed task force study, they also undertake, it's on our work plan, number four.
You're basically talking about combining items four and five.
That's correct, on our work plan and in the RFP.
So that is a motion to that effect, then,
yes.
Senator?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Any discussion to the motion? As Senator Solon has pointed out, there is, as part of the seabed language, one of the areas to be considered is wind easements, and I think that this would certainly be appropriate, and you might be able to kill off two birds here. So, any discussion to the motion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. I think we're pretty close to being able to wrap up here. We have not discussed some of the elements of that are included on the work plan. Senator Solon.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, to that issue, I think you and I could easily send a letter to Manitoba Hydro requesting the information that was requested in our legislation. Yes. But the nuclear energy study, I think maybe we still need to discuss the scope of that and how we wanted to address that, you know, whether it would be a literature study or whether exactly, you know, what would be the parameters of this nuclear energy study and whether or not we needed to have an RFP on that.
I do think that that's totally appropriate. Actually, in a discussion that we had earlier, if we could ask Mr. Fuller, I think that when we had a discussion of the work plan proposal, you enumerated a number of aspects to this that I thought were very insightful, and if I could ask you just to kind of run through that, we'd appreciate it.
Mr. Chair, number three, the nuclear study?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's something that we really have to discuss because of a number of issues. Well, one is it asks the one I turned to. Let's see. It's on page 5.34, members. So it actually starts on 6.1. It does ask to compare the costs of a nuclear plant with certain types of coal plants, including sequestration costs. And in this package of documents I put together at the end, there are two sequestration studies that were mandated under current law, which probably won't be available. So there's the issue of you know, what do we do with the cost of sequestration when we really don't know what that is. That's an ongoing study right now. The technology is uncertain. So I think that's one issue. The language was boiled down from the original House proposal, and so it talks just about the cost of construction and pre-design, design, and, of course, there's many other associated costs. So I think the task force has to decide what sort of information the legislature wanted and what would be of value, because I think the goal is to compare, you know, the overall cost of one sort of facility against another, and the language in the bill that passed doesn't articulate all those components of the cost. And then finally, another issue is the scope of the study, of course, is open-ended. Are we going to hire nuclear engineers? Are we, you know, what exactly are we asking for? Some generalized sense of sort of the two, or some site-specific design with two competing, you know, proposals? I think we have to sort of, which could be extremely expensive. It could be extremely expensive. So I think we have to get our arms around what will satisfy the needs of those who were proponents of this and felt the need to get this information, and what's doable and realistic given the current state of information and the cost of doing any particular elaboration of a study. So that's sort of, it could be extremely expensive. So we need, I think what we talked about is perhaps before we do an RFP, which would be a process to discern, you know, what's out there, maybe we should have some conversations with people in the industry and sort of get a sense of what you can get quick and dirty and what's necessary after that. You know, because the RFP, I think, would be so open-ended. You know, if we just put the statute out there, we could get bids between $10,000 and $2 million. I have no idea. So I think you'd be well advised to stop and pause, see what you want, and perhaps have some more conversations, and maybe authorize the chairs to have some conversations, and maybe send a note out to people saying what we can get at what price and what do they want to do.
Members, obviously this is, as Mr. Fuller articulated quite well, a very open-ended prospect that we have here, and one that's potentially very expensive. I don't think that maybe others have a different opinion, but I don't think that we really are at a point of being able to make any decision about how to proceed with this at this point today. But I think that we do need to begin thinking about exactly what we would hope to accomplish and how it could be accomplished so that we can get moving on this as soon as possible. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would agree with you. I just would like to note, though, that my sense of this was that people really were debating the kind of the basic, what's the cost per kilowatt hour, however we measure it, to the consumer. One saying, well, this one's cheaper, and then others saying, well, this one's cheaper. So I think that would be the outcome that I was at least hearing as that debate was going on.
Well, and I think that's certainly a major part of this. I think also there was clearly in the debate that took place in the House about this a question of the externalities, you know.
Oh, including, yeah.
I mean, the proponents of the study, I believe, were wanting to make the point that we should not ignore the possibility of a source of energy that did not presumably or at least overtly have the same carbon emissions questions as the obvious alternatives. And I don't know that it's even clear that that's the case. I've read a number of articles that suggest that, you know, it's not all as clear as it might seem. Mm-hmm. So that's certainly something that needs to be explored. Representative Wagenius.
Absolutely. Externalities. I think people were saying, yes, in this day and age, we count everything. So I would agree with you on that.
Mm-hmm. Representative Beard?
I think the thing that's driving this, Mr. Chair, is that lately, the last several years, there's been this fixation on the carbon dioxide portion of it. If that wasn't in our field of view, I don't even think we'd be having this study or this discussion. But with the concern and the focus on carbon dioxide now being bad for us, all of a sudden the discussion about whether uranium is a fuel source that doesn't release carbon dioxide naturally comes to the fore. I agree that the study that happens needs to take in the rather wide-ranging view of processing ore and mining it versus processing and mining coal, how much carbon dioxide is consumed, and the externalities there too. But I think that as you're thinking about how to propose an RFP for this and what we're looking for, bear in mind that the thing that's driving this whole thing is our fixation on carbon dioxide. And if you're looking for volunteers to have coffee with to talk it over, I'd be happy to volunteer.
We'd welcome that, Representative Beard. Senator Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if I can clarify it or if it'll just make it muddier, but it seemed to me that when we were in the conference committee, we were talking about alternatives. And so if you're going to look at alternatives, then what are all the costs? Not just the economic costs, but the cost to the environment, the total impact, and not just taking parts of these, but being able to take a whole industry and compare it against a separate part of the industry and to find out what those costs were. So that seems broader to me.
Actually, it's something I'm looking forward to having done. I think it's important that we do that. It's a question that recurs with great frequency, and I think that it's appropriate to revisit it. Senator, do you have any
trying to think of the appropriate motion in order to at least get it going, Mr. Chair? I don't need any. What we could do is just go out and explore and bring back at our next committee meeting a recommendation how to proceed on this.
Yeah, I would ask all the committee members to give this issue a very serious thought and be prepared to make suggestions or recommendations at the next meeting, which brings up the question of the next meeting. I believe that historically what we have done is as in conference committees and other situations, exchange the gavel meeting by meeting. Madam Chair, would you like to suggest the time for the next meeting?
Mr. Chair, I think my concern about leaving the decision about the nuclear energy study until the next meeting is that there is a March 1st deadline on a report on that. I don't know how long it will take, how long it takes to get the RFP out there and how long it takes to conduct the study. But I know that it's hard to get people together during the summer, and so I don't know if it's reasonable to expect to hold a meeting before September. But I'm certainly open to advice. We could tentatively set one for September and then leave it to the call of the chair, I guess. Okay. Mr. Chair, Mr. Fuller is recommending that a way we could proceed with the nuclear energy study would be if we had a motion to authorize the chairs to develop an RFP and send it out. And then it would be less important for us to meet during the summer. We might put the next meeting off to September.
I think we could do that with a kind of initial proposal that we ran past all of the members for input, if that seems agreeable. Representative Beard, what do you think?
I was just thinking that's why God invented email, Mr. Chairman, so you can think it up, fire us an email, and I'm sure we'll be happy to weigh in. In fact, I'd be happy to come up to Findlay Center, wherever you're at, and chat about it with you. And I've got a couple ideas. I'll talk to you after that.
Sure, maybe I can get my boat in the water. Yeah,
okay.
Summer.
I can help you do that.
Chair,
Senator,
I make that motion.
Is the motion clear to members, or do we reiterate it?
Mr. Chair, I move that this committee authorize the chairs to develop an RFP on nuclear energy, and that we inform the committee and allow for input by email before we submit that.
Very good. Any discussion to the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion is adopted.
Mr. Chairman, as long as we're looking for things to do, there are a couple things I'd like to just put on the our field of view. One is the folks at Manitoba Hydro. Their baseload power is figuring pretty prominently in some of our resource plans going forward in the future, and there's been a great deal of angst about that whole subject, and I think you'd find that they'd be amenable to having us come up and tour the place and visit with some of the First Nations people and things like that. I would feel more comfortable if this group actually financed the plan, so we went on our nickel and or the ratepayers, nickel, I guess, to be precise. But what I'm saying is we don't go up on their dime, that we go up on ours. But I think it would be a trip that they'd be glad to host and would be beneficial to all of us here. The second one is, and it doesn't rise quite to the level of importance, in my opinion, as Manitoba Hydro does, but the whole business of the gasification discussion. I serve on the Powering the Plains Gasification Working Group and have been myself to Terre Haute, Indiana, to see the Department of Energy's beta site where they've worked with several different grades of coal and product that they're turning into gas and actually have an IGCC electric plant there. I understand there's one also in North Dakota that I think maybe a portion of this group visited within the last 2 or 3 years. But if there's a way we could work that into our field trip list, that would be a field trip. I think that would be very worth our time. Thank you.
Thank you. I think those are both really good suggestions. I'd probably give that further discussion pending the outcome of our assessment request. Senator, do we have a...
Mr. Chair, I would say let's look for a future meeting in the fall, maybe late September, early October, if you're okay with leaving it open to that. But we definitely will meet. Okay.
Well, we will, I think we can leave it at that and just can have further discussion and give members plenty of notice if we can find a time that will work. Is there further business before the committee at this time?
I think so.
Mr. Pomeroy points out that on the work plan proposal at the bottom of the first page, carrying over into the second, there are a number of items that we may or may not have some concern for that are at least potential activities that we want to have some involvement in, oversight of, or requesting reports about. Perhaps we could take a moment to just look through those items and see if there's anything that needs to be discussed at the moment. Representative Beard.
As a member of this group who takes this charge pretty seriously, I would certainly appreciate at least an email update of when these groups are meeting and if there's any summary notes or anything like that. I think we should be courtesy copied on those. And then secondly, point number two, the greenhouse gas emission control. I have a hunch that probably is the plan that Commissioner Garvey gave us the update on.
Yes.
All right, so it's already underway.
So we already have asked for that.
Yes.
I think that's Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. The one thing that we talked about, or one of the things we talked about, was the greenhouse gas emissions control and having feedback on that. I am a little troubled by waiting until October to have another meeting of this group, because by then any feedback that we would turn around and give back would be coming quite late in the process. They need to be further along than that. So if it is our intention, and I would hope it is our intention, to give some feedback, I would want us to meet earlier than October. And actually, thinking we should be meeting like in late August. That if people's school starts for lots of folks in late August, I'm that's my concern about waiting so long. Mr. Chair, I'm open to meetings monthly if you wish, but I have a sense it will be difficult getting committee members here, and there may be ways that we can provide information to you without meeting, and we could stand ready to call a meeting if there seems to be the need to do that too.
And Representative Wagenius, I tend to agree. I think that with the really ambitious agenda that we have for this group, that we should certainly be open to meeting again as soon as we can get the information that we need organized and be prepared to do that. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. I'm glad to read emails, and I am glad to read emails about all of these things that are going on. But where I really get my best information and is from hearing from other members and their observations. And sometimes I think that is our power and the ability to share, even though I can disagree with Representative Beard. He makes an observation, and I can dwell on that. And it's that interplay that I think is the most important. And for the Climate Change Task Force, I think there is the potential in this room for some genuinely good feedback.
I agree.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Sandra.
I would just offer, as we agree and disagree, I would disagree with that. I personally think we ought to stay 100 miles away from that task force. I think we ought to let it work, let it have its independence. I don't think it ought to have a legislative slant, so to speak. We'll see it in the due course, and we'll debate it, and we may agree or disagree with what they have to say, but these are citizen volunteers that have come together who may be influenced by perhaps what we say or how we think, and it seems to me that may bias their work, and so I do worry about a little bit about having legislative intervention into their work. Just a personal opinion.
Well, Senator, personally, I did not contemplate any kind of intervention. I think what we were talking about simply is being informed about what's going on.
And that would be fine.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. There's a difference between intervention and perhaps some observations like Senator Anderson's observation about the open meeting law. I think that was a critical observation. Mm-hmm. And something that perhaps was not as strongly on the radar screen as it should have been. And so that kind of observation is something that legislators do because we're looking out for what are Minnesotans thinking about. And sometimes task forces, particularly when it's stakeholder groups, when I hear stakeholder, I hear lobbyist. And so hopefully we're representing, you know, I'm trying to represent the Minnesotans in my district, and I expect you're doing the same thing. And that's the kind of observation I think that we make the best, do the best job with.
Yeah. Is there any further business at this time? Members, thank you. With that, the meeting is adjourned.
Thank you for this meeting. Hey, Annie.
Yeah.